Is your cell phone bill out of control? Then this is your wake-up call. The new TracFone Wireless gives you unlimited talk and text starting at $20 a month, no contract. Plus, unlimited carryover data with active service. Yep, the new TracFone Wireless. Now you're in control. See terms and conditions at TracFone.com.
Welcome to Our House, the only complete on-air resource for your home ownership needs. Now, here's the host of Our House, Peter Hunt.
Welcome to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com. We're constantly updating, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA here in Buffalo, Niagara, all across upstate, and even out to Phoenix, Arizona, and now Boston, Massachusetts. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage. Call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700. Ask one of our skilled mortgage consultants to work with you to find the lowest rate and closing costs for your home financing needs and wants, and that's a guarantee of ours. And also ask about our many exclusive programs, including our pre-purchase commitment that allows you at no cost or risk, doesn't cost you a penny to enter into this program to effectively then enter the market to find your next home with cash. And today's competitive world, you want to do that. If you're in the market for a home today, you've probably recognized that there's not a great inventory there. So when that house does become available that you want to make sure that you're as competitive as possible. And that's the pre-purchase commitment. So call Hunt Mortgage today, 633-3700 for personalized, customized. We'd like to call Knock Your Socks Off service and check out that low rate guarantee. And don't forget about the first ever 24/7 365 real estate hotline. The Hunt Hotline, which gives you access to all available information about any property listed for sale in Buffalo, Niagara, Rochester, Syracuse, Albany, Utica, Watertown, and even Phoenix, Arizona. Simply dial 716-631-4800. That's the local number here in Western New York. Enter the street number of the house you want to know about, no matter whose listing it is. You drive by, you see a sign. Doesn't have to be ours. Could be anybody's. And the signs today are very confusing. There's pictures and 14 phone numbers and text numbers. Forget all that. 631-4800. All you have to do is enter the street number of the house you want to know about. The system will prompt you with a choice of street name. Select the one you want. You'll hear a brief description, and then you'll be texted a link to a dedicated website on that property all automatically. And just that fast, anytime, in any market we serve on any listing, whether it's ours or any other broker's. Doesn't have to be ours. And with the very active market that we're in right now, there is a shortage of inventory, as I mentioned to you before. Your home may be worth more than you think. And in order to find that out, what you want to do is to contact a Hunt Real Estate ERA sales professional. Let them give you a real analysis of your home. You can go online and get what's called an algorithmic determination of value through various sources, including three different sources on our website alone. But that's not necessarily the whole story. You need an interpretation of that to really understand where your home fits in the market. And we believe in today's market you may have a lot more than you think. And if you're thinking about buying another home, what you want to do is make sure that your house is sold when you go into the market. There's one way to do that, and that's through the seller security plan, available only through Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. All you have to do is ask them this: how will you sell my home? And they'll answer this: we will sell your home, or ERA will buy it. Very simply, that's the best plan in the marketplace today. 633-9400 to learn more. Hunt is the official real estate and relocation provider for our hometown professional teams, the Buffalo Bills, the Buffalo Sabres, even the Rochester Americans, and we also support our Buffalo Bisons in that season. We're broadcast live here on WBEN 930 AM. If you'd like to participate in today's show, call us here in the studio at 803-0930. We are live. 1-800-616-9236 if you're long distance, and star 930 if you're mobile, and 30930 if you'd like to text us. Those are all free calls or texts, so join us on the air at Our House. We have a very special show for you today. In the studio with me today is Dr. Michael Brogan, who is the Vice President for Academic Affairs at Damon College. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Peter. Thanks for having me.
It's good to have you back.
Thank you.
It's been a long time since we've had your friend Gary there, Gary Olson, on a couple times in the meantime, but it's been a while since you've been on. You know, our mission on the show, Mike, is to help our listeners protect and enhance their investment in real estate right here in Western New York or any place that may be listening to us. And, you know, the interesting thing is that oftentimes, particularly those of us that are a little bit closer to the economic world than maybe everybody is, we often kind of contemplate what real contribution to the value of the community a college makes. When you sit around your office and talk to your buddies there at Damon, do you contemplate really how the academic program that you're providing for the community, the careers that you're helping to train young people for, how that really contributes to the economy here, the marketplace as a whole?
We do, without question. Certainly, looking at the economic impact that the college has at large is significant. There's we have approximately 2,700 students. We have over 300 faculty, including part-time and full-time. We have hundreds of staff and you know, a significant number of administrators. So the population at Damon alone you know, has a significant impact in the community in Amherst and Greater Buffalo at large. We also look at the programs that we offer and those programs that will allow students to move forward toward a career that will be, you know, certainly beneficial to them, but also contribute to the community. We offer many health professions, including physical therapy and physician assistant studies, nursing, athletic training. We offer programs at the undergraduate and graduate level in business and education, and certainly all the humanity programs that you'd expect to find at a liberal arts college. We also offer some very, very attractive new emerging fields, such as animation in our visual and performing arts department, and applied behavior analysis, which is a graduate program out of our health and human services division, which is a new emerging profession that provides very skilled professionals to teach other clinicians and professionals how to work with behavior issues. It could be a student who has a particular behavior issue. It could be someone on the autistic spectrum, but it could also be working with a corporate entity to see how behavior and productivity could be improved in a particular industry.
You mentioned a lot there, everything from, you know, your employment base to the linkage to, in some respects, to business and how you select your programming. And I want to get back to that in a second, but there's been a lot of talk, and we've done several shows on job readiness, job training. We had Stephen Tucker on from the Northland Center a couple weeks ago, and just to see how we're going to be able to prepare the next generation of workforce. And we've got a huge amount of retirees over the next 10 years here, just aging out in the workforce here in Western New York. How do you look at your academic program and try to match that with the obvious and or perceived needs in our workforce here in Western New York?
Well, it's a great question. The very first thing we do is we look at all the different industries and career paths that are available in society. But what's most important is as new fields emerge and as those fields become more sophisticated that are already out there, students that are interested in moving into those careers have to be able to think. Mm-hmm. So we put a lot of emphasis on our core curriculum that's meant to teach students how to learn, how to critically think, how to problem solve, how to communicate, how to be engaged in societal issues and be able to assess you know, the values associated with those issues and then move forward. So to train in a particular area for a particular job is one thing, but to prepare a graduate that could really move into one or other areas and to be able to contribute immediately and then learn how to be proficient in that particular environment is extremely important. And we believe that the liberal arts education provides that, teaching students how to learn and how to think.
You and I both know that's a tough sell. The fact of life is that parents raising children in today's society and looking at the cost of the education at the secondary and tertiary levels, it's very difficult for them to rationalize the high cost of education today when You know, they hear something like that. We're gonna teach your kids how to think and communicate. Well, if they haven't got, I mean, if I'm listening to that as a parent of a 17 or 16 year old, I'm thinking, what the hell have I been doing for the last 10 years? I think I've been trying to do that, but okay, how is that going to get them a job? And this is the thing that we hear, and so there's a lot of emphasis today on looking at the cost of higher education, saying what's my return on investment? How do you respond to that kind of? And there's so much dialogue out there about this.
Well, it's a great question. It's a great point. What we believe is that students will have an opportunity to move into one field, but it's not like it was when I was, you know, at the college age. And it will continue to change. Students won't move into one career and most likely stay in that career. They'll move into, you know, several. Some of the statistics say anywhere between 12 to 15 different jobs in their career, moving from one field to another. In order to do that, you have to have a pretty broad spectrum of knowledge and ability to adapt and so on. So, you know, again, we think that having that preparation is necessary, but the issue of getting a job, how will I get a job with that type of education? We've done what we believe is a very good job in linking the undergraduate programs with meaningful and purposeful career paths, such as physical therapy, physician assistant studies, nursing, athletic training, and so on, business. So what we've done is we've looked at that issue relative to price. To go to college is very expensive. So if you can move into a curriculum, a path that is very purposeful and meaningful, and it's accelerated to some extent, for instance, a 3-2 program where, you know, in 3 years, you'll basically complete your liberal arts curriculum along with several courses of your major. The next 2 years will be dedicated to the particular field that you'll be involved in. At the end of 4 years, you graduate with a bachelor's degree, and then at the end of 5 years, you graduate with that master's degree. So we call that a 3-2 program, where at the end of 5 years, you graduate with a bachelor's degree and a master's degree. You get that very broad and very deep education so that it will allow you to move into a particular field, but not only one field, but many fields. Another example is if a student chooses to go to Damon for, let's say, a degree in history and political science, they could work out a 3+2 program where they graduate at the end of 4 years with a degree in political science, and at the end of 5 years, they graduate with a master's in public health. So the student is paying one less year in tuition, they're getting into the workforce 1 year sooner, making a salary, contributing to the economy and contributing to society through their knowledge. Just want to mention one more thing, because you had some great points as well. What we've done this year at Damon is we've instituted an early admissions process. So students who choose to come to Damon next fall of 2020, will pay a tuition and they'll lock in on that tuition for the next 4 years. So they'll know what that tuition will be. There will not be any increase in that tuition. The tuition will be guaranteed, so the family can plan on what tuition will cost. The student can plan accordingly, not have any worries if they're going to be able to afford a higher tuition next year. So we think we've addressed, you know, both of those areas: how to prepare a student, you know, for a meaningful career, and how to address the price of a higher education.
Again, you've said a lot there, and I'm going to try to unpack a little bit of it by asking you how you actually go about that determination of those kinds of degrees and those kinds of fields of study that will best prepare your students to actually get a job and be part of our community right here in Western New York. And part of that is the dialogue that takes place between places like Damon and your competing schools around the community, with business leaders, civic leaders, political leaders, so that you can understand really what the needs of our community are and how you can design an academic program that will meet those needs and answer the question to parents that, you know, what's going to happen to my kid when they finish here?
Well, we try to stay on top of every challenge and issue that society faces with respect to, you know, different industry and needs. So information technology, you know, is certainly an emerging field. We've recently started a data science program that is meant to prepare students for analytics and moving into that IT world. We listen very closely to our community partners. A good example is a few years ago, Roswell Park came over to Damon and asked if we'd be interested in working with them to set up a cytotechnology program. Well, to be honest, I had never heard of cytotechnology. So I learned from them what it is and learned...
What is it?
Well, it's interesting. So a cytotechnologist is someone who is very, very skilled and proficient in preparing a specimen, typically a solid specimen, on a slide so that a pathologist could then read the slide to see if there's atypical cells, abnormal cells, or normal cells. So someone who has a skin lesion or some other type of lesion tumor who has some type of biopsy, that cytotechnologist would prepare the slide for the pathologist who then would read it and then diagnose the, you know, the particular presentation or lesion. It's extremely important that the person who prepares that slide is that skilled and proficient, because the pathologist could easily misread something if it hadn't been done, you know, well. So that cytotechnology is now at the master's level.
At Damon.
It's a really interesting program, but it really, you know, is a good example of what you just mentioned. Roswell Park came to us and believed that, you know, Damon is very good at listening and very, you know, good at participating with the community needs, and could we be, you know, involved in this? So we started a 4+1 program where students come to Damon. They're at the college for 4 years. At the end of that four-year period, they graduate with a bachelor's in science. And then the last year, the fifth year, they're over at Roswell, where they're trained in a didactic fashion by pathologists and professional instructors. They work with the clinicians and the laboratory specialists. It's essentially 1 year of full-time work, so that at the end of that year, they graduate with a master's degree. So a 4+1 program. Every one of our students has passed the national boards, and every one of them has been hired prior to their graduation. So that's an example of listening to the community, and we're doing the same thing now with a program that's named Pathology Assistant. So we do listen to the community, and we try to grow from those needs.
Let me get a little bit more fundamental for a second here before we go to our break. One of the things that's regularly cited here, and no one school can cure this, is the substantial gap between the kind of student you're talking about that's going to pursue a career like that, that has to be well-prepared prior even to coming to Damon, and then obviously the skills that they'll learn at the school will prepare them for a very, very high-level professional career. There's an argument out there that I tend to subscribe to, that we really have two societies here. We've got the one part of our society that will look at a program like that, or a family that will look at a program like that fairly early on in a student's life, and the family will work with the young person to prepare them to go to a school like Damon to be educated the way you just described. And then there's the other part of society that has no connection whatsoever to that kind of opportunity, let's say. And it may not be there may not be any specific cause of that except the environment that the young person happens to grow up in, which and I think the gap is substantial in our society. There's substantial efforts in this community to close that gap. Things like the Say Yes Foundation, for example, that provides a whole new level of I guess, preparatory activities for families and young people so that they're better prepared to go to school. But there's still, we have a long way to go. Does Damon engage in that kind of dialogue with other parts of the community? Obviously, if Roswell comes to you with a specific need, that's a huge opportunity for Damon and for Roswell and for our whole community. But there's a lot more people out there that need perhaps a lot more fundamental guidance well into their youth, so that they're able to participate in programs like that. Do you engage in other parts of the community in that dialogue?
We do. We try to stay very, very close to elementary and secondary education. We have a teacher prep program at the college that keeps us close to that community. We work very, very closely with different partners in the community, including the Children's Guild and the parochial schools, the charter schools. We're working with New York State and all those parties I just mentioned to try to establish a consortium that would represent and advocate for various schools throughout the community for special needs and, you know, those types of wraparound services that perhaps they're not receiving now that, you know, they should in the future. And we believe that that type of initiative will help do that. So we are very, very engaged with that, you know, type of concern. We've also just developed, Dr. Greg Nayer is our vice president for strategic initiatives, and he's really done a wonderful job, a true professional who uses analytics for essentially every initiative we move forward with. He's just established the Center for Diversity and Inclusion, and that will be designed to not only support but to provide opportunities for students to grow professionally, but also to receive the wraparound services that they need. Our Student Success Center is another opportunity for people to gain that support that they need. So we try to work before they get to the college and then when they're at the college.
We'll come back and talk about that and a lot more after these very important messages from our house to yours. Thank you.
How do you keep your family healthy this season when it feels like everyone around you is getting sick? I use Sambucol. It's drug-free and scientifically tested to help support your immunity. Sambucol has the power of black elderberry in every purple bottle. It comes in tablets, syrup, chewables, or my kids' favorite, the great-tasting gummies. So this cold and flu season, support your family's immunity with Sambucol Black Elderberry. It's the only one I trust for my family. And best of all, my kids love it too.
Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and home ownership experience. HuntRealEstate.com is the only place on the web where you can find a complete inventory of homes, not just here in Buffalo, Niagara, but all across upstate, and through our links to Phoenix, Arizona, and soon Boston, Massachusetts. And you'll also find access to a complete set of home ownership services at HuntRealEstate.com, which is powered by Hunt Real Estate ERA. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, and for more information about our many exclusive programs, including the one that allows you to roll the costs of home improvements into your mortgage, allowing you to effectively buy the before and live the after. And in today's world, where we've got a wide variety of, you know, very fine architecture in Western New York, but some of it's pretty old, you look at this house and say, gee, it's a beautiful house, but man, where do I start? The idea is that you will know when you go through this program, and you'll also know how much it will cost you, and all those costs can be rolled right into the mortgage, which is the Buy the Before and Live the After program. 633-3700. Call and ask for details and also ask about our pre-purchase commitment and even our warm home loan as well. And don't forget about our second look program. If you've gone through the process of talking to a lender and you think you've got everything nailed down and you're ready to go, call us. Free of charge, 633-3700, and we'll take a look at that, make sure that you're getting the lowest rate and closing costs in that program. And if you are, we'll make sure that that's the case. And if you're not, we'll offer you a program that will. And if we can't match it or beat it, we'll give you a gift certificate for $50. So we've got nothing to lose and everything to gain, and that's 633-3700. 3700. And if you've got a general question about real estate, call the Hunt Customer Service Center, the only one that's kind of North America, 631-933-9400. Ask one of our skilled mortgage and real estate representatives to instantly direct you to the appropriate professional for your particular needs or answer your question right there, whether you're buying or selling, financing, insuring, or even fixing up a home. So call today, and remember our guarantee stands. We will sell your home or ERA will buy it. That's a seller security plan available only through a Hunt Real Estate ERA professional. Stop into one of our many open houses this week and ask how that could work for you. I'm in the studio today with Dr. Michael Brogan, who is the vice president of academic affairs at Damon College, and also the recipient of the 2019 Excellence in Healthcare Award from Business First. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
That's a great honor.
Thank you.
We've been talking about a wide range of things, and before we go back to those, my many questions, which I've got for you here today, we have a caller online. This is Gustav from Williamsville. Gustav, how can we help you?
Hi, good morning. Your guest mentioned about critical thinking is part of the what you want to get out of your college for lifelong learning, et cetera. I'm just curious if there's any reflection on the role of social media and particularly text messaging in some of these abbreviated methods of communication, which seem to be making critical thinking conversation pretty difficult. I would say half of the text messages I get are like almost incoherent, ungrammatical, very hard to figure out what people want. And more particularly younger people seem to be gravitating to these arenas for communication. And I don't know, I'm just kind of emoting here, but is there any thought about that? And where there's an attempt to drag people back into more detailed discourse.
Interesting question. How would you respond to that?
It's a great question, and we deal with it on a daily basis. You know, in education, the thought is, if you can write, you can think. In order to write, you have to be able to think, and you can write well if you can think. So then the question is, well, how do you deal with, you know, students that have come up through society texting messages instead of spelling R-A-R-E, you know, it's just an R or U is not Y-O-U, it's just a U, and, you know, they use this abbreviated type of communication. How do you deal with that when they have to formally write? And it is an issue. We've instituted a writing program across the curriculum. We have various writing workshops. We have dedicated professionals who are committed to designing programs to work with students, you know, to really build their skills in that area. And then we expect the skills to be there when they graduate. So we have preliminary writing courses, you know, the composition courses, you know, that start in the first year. And then students have to take more advanced writing courses as they move forward. So that question is terrific, and it really is, you know, something that people have to realize. To abbreviate, you know, writing is not to be able to write in a professional manner, and it certainly doesn't reflect, you know, an intellect. So great question, and we do try to address it.
In our company, when we have a meeting, if I'm there, I ask that all electronics are off. And it's almost impossible to, first of all, to supervise that. And you don't want to be a hard guy and make life difficult. But we've become a society where instantaneous connection is just, you know, that's just the way it is. You have to be constantly looking at a screen to constantly check for those abbreviated messages that the caller was talking about, and you just feel totally, you know, disconnected and useless if you don't have, you know, 14 different things open and watching and 19 different screens and everything else. And I just find that, first of all, I went to a lecture in Florida, and the speaker was Arianna Huffington from the Huffington Post. And it was fascinating what she had to say. She was talking about just this topic and how she was constantly looking at a cell phone and computers and all this information coming at her. And she said she kind of woke up to the impossibility of multitasking when she was, her chauffeur had taken her to one of her kids' sporting events, and she was sitting in the car looking at her cell phone or whatever she was doing and, you know, thinking she was actually at her child's event. And she's finally said, it's impossible to multitask. And I think what our caller was talking about is how, and I don't know how you deal with this in an academic environment, because the kids come in, they've got a computer, a laptop, they've got a, you know, tablet, they've got a cell phone, they've got probably two or three devices on them when they walk in the door. How in the world can a professor or in any environment, in a business environment, how in the world can a real dialogue take place when you've got that much distraction?
Well, it's a great question. It is a challenge. In the classroom, technology has become such a part of the presentation. There's flipped classrooms where materials are given to the student prior to coming to class. They're to review those materials and then come in the class, and then that's what's discussed. There's different types of technologies to engage the students interactively to prevent them from being occupied with some of those other devices. So if a lecture's being given, for instance, students may be required to participate with what's being up on the screen through different questioning, different responses, perhaps surveys and things like that. So, you know, outside of saying, you know, everyone needs to shut down their, you know, their technology and put it in your backpack and put it in the back of the room or whatever, it's really a challenge to engage the students and then to get them to participate in the information that you're trying to, you know, to share. But it is a problem, and, you know, I think technology is the root of the problem, but it can also become part of the cure.
Well, it has to be.
Yeah.
It has to be, but, you know, you said something, words to the effect that something I firmly believe, and a consultant told us a long time ago, before there was a lot of this distraction of various forms of technology, and he said very simply, writing activates thinking. The physical act of writing activates your thought, and you referred to something very similar a little while ago. I'm not so sure, and the problem often with computer technology, if you're using the keyboard, is that it's by its very nature linear, which is the way, you know, we're taught to design an outline, for example, which is not the way our brain works. Now, of course, you can draw on screens and all that kind of stuff, which kind of gives it more of a freewheeling and more like the way our brain works. But it just seems to me to be that we make the task even more difficult through the layers of technology that you just described, for example. Now, that may be a means by which we can communicate more and more and more effectively in terms of just the volume of information we can communicate. But still, isn't something lost in all that? The real focus and concentration and the ability to take one subject and delve completely into it so that there's a take-home value for the student as opposed to just getting through the volume of stuff.
I think things are lost, and I think again that then becomes part of the mission of instruction to try to engage those folks in different ways and reflective thinking and then writing, and you know, and you're absolutely right. If you're thinking, but now all of a sudden you have to type on a keyboard, look at the screen, and you're already doing three or four different things outside of thinking versus taking your thought and putting it on paper. So I do think it's an operation that can compromise, I think, thought and interfere with probably the product of that thought.
We come back in our last segment. I want you to think about, and I'd like our listeners even to think about, if you had advice for anyone in terms of not necessarily an academic pursuit, but if you had advice to anyone in terms of what would be the key things that they might do to enhance any kind of academic or any other kind of learning experience, what would that advice be? And we're going to take a little break here so you can think about it for a second. But I also want you to think about and I'd like our listeners to think about too. What happens at an academic in an academic environment that adds to something that's really important to, I guess, the vitality of a community, and that's the and frankly real estate values, that's the perception of coolness and how the academic world really contributes to that. And we'll be right back with more from our house tours after these very important messages. Welcome back to Our House. This is Peter Hunt, and the show is brought to you by the all-new HuntRealEstate.com, where everything is truly easier for your real estate and homeownership experience. The show is also brought to you by Hunt Mortgage, home of the pre-purchase commitment and the Buy the Before and Live the After program. And don't forget about that Second Look program, 633-3700. Call today. I'm in the studio today with Dr. Michael Brogan, the Vice President for Academic Affairs at Damon College, and we've been having kind of a wide-ranging discussion about education, specifically what's happening at Damon and how they respond to community and future employment needs here in our community, and really what how the match takes place between an academic environment and the needs of a community, and then ultimately how all that contributes to the kind of the enterprise value of Western New York, which I think is truly significant. We have a caller on the line, Mike, before we get back to those two kind of broad questions I asked you before the break. This is Frank from Williamsville. Frank, how can we help you?
Yeah, I was just wondering about thoughts on the pace of change that we're dealing with now for these students. I mean, I wonder how much of what they're learning today is going to be still utilized and in practice in the fields that they choose to go into in 5 years either, or 2 years. I mean, everything seems to flip so fast. It's almost like we get our life is automatically updated by Apple every month or so. And I think the kids need to learn more. It's just how to accept change and deal with change than the topics that they're actually dealing with, because in who knows if they're going to be obsolete in days or months.
Well, I'm not sure I can unpack that. Why don't you try to unpack that, Mike?
Well, I think, you know, you're right, and I think the answer to that is it's more important to teach a student and to develop a student's mind to learn and then to integrate that knowledge than it is to teach them a particular application, a vocational application or something of that nature, because things are changing so rapidly. You know, where a surgeon used her hands, you know, in the past and perhaps today, you know, tomorrow it may be using a robot. And, you know, that's a totally new, you know, application. So someone who can critically think, someone who can learn analytically, someone who can problem solve, can move from what something is today and then be able to adapt it, you know, towards a new technology tomorrow. So that's why, you know, coming from a liberal arts college, you know, the mission of the college, you know, we would say, and Peter already mentioned that most of us say it's important to teach students to learn, you know, to create that person who can analytically think, problem solve. But isn't it more important or most important for them to be prepared for a job? I think with what you just said answers the question, and it is to really prepare that student to be able to critically think, to problem solve, to use, you know, an analytical mind and logic so that they could move on from what is today to tomorrow.
You know, this kind of goes to the whole point about how, at least point in my mind about why we even do this show and what we talk about here on the show, and that is really how ultimately a community like ours distinguishes itself among so many other communities out there that are trying to do almost exactly the same thing that you're trying to do at Damon College and the other schools are trying to do locally, and then there are other schools that reputationally might have a, you know, 100 or 150 year head start on Damon College, places like Boston and New York City and Chicago and other places that really have a kind of a fundamental benefit that we have to create here effectively. And a lot of that has to do with obviously how we're perceived from the outside. And there's one of the things that we've been talking about here regularly on the show is the perception now that something cool is happening here in Buffalo, and you know, no one, they talk about bits and pieces of it development wise and what's going on at the universities and medical school and all that other stuff, the medical campus, the waterfront, all the things that we've talked about many times on this show. But, you know, then the issue is, how do we sustain that? How do we sustain that momentum? How do we keep things going? And a lot of that has to do with what young people think about, you know, is this a cool place to be? Because I always want to be the coolest place I can be. And is this a cool place? How do you at Damon, do you think about that kind of stuff, that you want this to be not just a place that has these high aspirations that you're talking about, but also a place that's just plain fun and exciting and has such a vibe that it becomes irresistible? That's kind of my dream for Western New York.
Well, I think we're getting there. And I think the president of the college, Dr. Gary Olson, has done a wonderful job in developing the campus aesthetics, which do make it exciting and beautiful. Dr. Greg Nayer has just recently put in a sand volleyball court, along with a new basketball lighted court outside that'll become an ice rink in the winter. Outside of the campus being exciting and beautiful, how can you beat Western New York? I always find it interesting when people speak so highly of San Francisco and you know, the seven Victorian homes and so on. You could drive through any street on the east side of Buffalo and see beautiful architecture, or the west side, and the architecture in Buffalo is just incredible. The life that the lake brings us year round is unparalleled. So Buffalo, the culture that Buffalo offers, with international, world-renowned museums and different areas of the city. So we look at Western New York and say, how can you beat it? You just need to come and see it. And if you come and see it, you know, you will be enthused and excited and very proud to stay. I always say this, and I'll just mention this, that at Damon College, we have about 130 full-time faculty members, and they come from various institutions and universities from around the country. Some of our best, Harvard and Princeton and Yale, they come from overseas, Cambridge and so on. These young professionals, PhDs, postdocs, they could pretty much go anywhere. They come to Damon for their first job, and they never leave. And Peter, you've known me for a long time, that I've been at Damon 38 years. I'm a living example that you come and you never leave. And I think a major part of that is not only the college and the students that we have the privilege to teach, but it's the Buffalo, Western New York region. How can you beat it?
Well, you've said a lot there, Mike, as you always do. And this is what I heard anyway, that at Damon itself, you've focused on the aesthetics, obviously the programming to be in tune with what's happening in our community, but also in the rest of the world. The physical activities, outdoor, taking advantage of our climate, our environment, and our culture here in Western New York, which is critical. Let me go back to a question I asked just prior to the break, which is something for people like you, I always try to figure out if what's on your mind along these lines. But I'm asked from time to time when I might do a discussion with young people, if I have any advice for them, what would it be in terms of just getting by in life? What would be the most important things? And I answer with three things. Number one, you need to be able to read fast, because there's so much information out there that you've got to assimilate, that it's extremely difficult if you can't get that into your head quickly. And I think sometimes we labor over a paragraph, and then by the end of the paragraph, we can't remember what was in the first sentence because our mind drifts. Speed reading is one way that kind of compensate for that. So I tell them, learn to read quickly, in one way, shape, or form. Secondly, learn to take notes in such a way that responds to the way your brain works, not linear fashion, but get the ideas on paper, splash them on a page, and process called brain mapping, which you probably are familiar with. And the third thing I advise them of is the ability to speak, communicate, particularly in front of a group, the greatest fear in society. But if you can overcome that, you've got skills that in many cases aren't taught in any college or high school or any other place, but they are taught places, and you can learn these things. If you were to advise a young person today, or any person, what skills would be most important? And I'm not talking about the broad liberal arts, because obviously you've touched on that several times. But okay, if I could do one thing for myself, or two things, or three things for myself in the next 3, 4, 5, 6 months to really improve my quality of life and my ability to enjoy all the things we've been talking about here today, what would they be?
Well, you've done a better job than I have thinking about it. I would probably go along with everything you said and recognize how important each one of those, you know, attributes would be. I would say enjoy learning. That, to me, that's the most important thing for a person to recognize. Recognize how enjoyable learning is. Recognize how important and enjoyable research is. And it happens to every person almost every minute. Be exposed to everything you can to learn as much as you can, because that will add to the enjoyment of your entire life. Driving on the thruway, you're doing research almost every second. You're looking at how many cars are in front of me, who's to my right, how many cars are in the right lanes, you know, how can I move forward, you know, will I turn here, will I put my blinker on there? And then you realize that, gee, every time I come this way at this time in the morning, there's always a traffic pattern. So how do I look at that traffic pattern, that problem, if you will, and then how do I adjust? Well, I'll move over to the second lane for these 2 miles, and then I realize I have to move over to the third lane for the next 2 miles, and then I can get back over to the right mile to catch my exit. But those are opportunities for you to think and to do research, and then to come out with an outcome that would, you know, somehow make your experience more enjoyable. But you could take it, you know, far beyond that and talk about finding a new discovery or something of that nature. But it's life in general to, you know, to go somewhere that you've never gone and learn as much about it, see as much about it, and know about, you know, it. So knowing is enjoyable, you know, learning to learn and recognizing how enjoyable knowing is, I think really builds a life that, you know, we talk to students and we say how important it is to study abroad, you know, because that will enrich your life in so many ways. When you're in conversation for the rest of your life, you'll be able to say, yes, I've seen that, and this is what I've learned there. And so enjoy every opportunity. If you learn of a new coffee and you enjoy it, well, it was that learning experience that put you to another happy day of your life. So I'd say enjoy learning.
I think it's fabulous. I would add one more thing to the list. Be very interested in other people. Because, one of the things that all this technology and social media and everything else I think is breeding is an enormous amount of narcissism in our society. And I think that's a nice thing, because maybe people don't get recognized enough, and so they need to draw attention to themselves, and I think that's fine. But at the same time, the real way you endear yourself to others is by acting interested in them as opposed to pronouncing great things about yourself.
Absolutely right.
And I think
great point.
I think social media kind of takes it in the wrong direction. And one of the things that helps you to become interested in others is just what you're saying, enjoying learning. Because learning is by its nature, you're asking somebody else, how would you look at this situation? Mm-hmm. Or tell me what you think I should know. And this is critically important, that we have that thirst for knowledge. And getting back to the purpose of our show, which is help people protect and enhance their investment in real estate here. And I appreciate what you're saying about how Damon contributes to that, and by inference our other educational institutions as well, but particularly the way Damon is approaching it, I've always admired, as you know very well. Any last thoughts, Michael? How could people reach you if they wanted to learn more?
Well, first, again, I'd like to say thank you. Thank you for supporting higher education in Western New York, Peter, and thank you for all you do for the community. People could reach me at Damon College. Again, my name is Mike Brogan. The number at Damon is 716-839-3600. And if you ask for Mike Brogan, they'll put you in contact with me. We always encourage people to visit. And if there's ever anything we can help you with, please give me a call.